I've got Sebastopol's Chief of Police, Jeff Weaver, and Officer David Edney in the studio. And we're going to be talking about a very important community meeting, which is going to be happening at Annerley High School on Thursday, January the 23rd, starting at 6:30 in the theatre, I believe. And so we'll be talking about basically drugs and what's happening with kids, the whole thing, the whole schmear. So we'll see what's happening in our area. And let's get down to my interview here. And we have Jeff and we have David, and they are with the Sebastopol Police Department. And Jeff is the Chief of Police. And how long have you been Chief, Jeff?
Just this week, I concluded my 10th year as Chief of Police, so I'm starting my 11th year this week.
Oh, amazing. That's pretty long.
It's a long tenure. I'm the longest tenured chief in the county, and I think I'm about in the top 10% in the state. Most chiefs only last 4 or 5 years.
Wow. So what's the secret of your success?
I don't know. I live in the community and live just outside the city limits and love where I work. And so far, they haven't kicked me out. So.
Excellent. Now, Officer David Edney, and yourself, how long have you been with the department?
I've been with Sebastopol for, actually, in February, it'll be 5 years.
Mm.
Yes.
So you're enjoying it?
Oh, I love it. I love the city. I love the department I work for. It's a really great place to work.
So what, we'll ask both of you, but what inspired you to get into police work? What brought you there?
For me, originally, well, my grandfather was a police officer in San Francisco. He's retired from there. And so I had that influence growing up. And then as I was going through college at the JC, I took some AJ classes. I got interested in the cadet program. And once I did that, it was over for me. I was in love, and I knew that this is what I wanted to do. So from that moment on, I worked really hard to go to college and graduate and then go to the academy and get hired. And luckily, Chief Weaver took a chance on me, and it worked out.
Well, so you've been 5 years in the whole time in the department then?
Correct. I've been with Sebastopol 5 years. And before that, I worked for the junior college police, but in a dispatch and community service officer capacity.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And Jeff, what was your inspiration to get into police work?
Well, there's kind of two parts to that. I was originally interested in being a firefighter, but I'm a very picky eater, and firefighters eat together, and cops eat alone. And so I thought, you know, I don't want to get stuck having to eat something that I don't want at a fire station, so I kind of switched gears that way. And the other thing is when I was younger, for example, playing basketball or baseball or football, I always wanted to be the referee, the umpire, not one of the players. And when I was involved in theater, I was a stage manager, not the actor. And so I've kind of liked that role of, you know, facilitating things rather than being a part of them, but helping make them happen. And I think in a very real way, police officers do that in society. So that was attractive to me.
So how long have you been a police officer in total?
I went to the police academy in 1988, and so I'm in my 25th year. I spent a short period of time at the Santa Rosa Police Department. It quite honestly didn't work out. And so I went back to the Santa Rosa Junior College Police, where I was a full-time police officer there. But after about a year, I came out to Sebastopol as a reserve police officer and then worked my way up through the ranks from reserve to officer to sergeant to lieutenant and then ultimately to chief.
Oh, wonderful. That's a wonderful lesson that you can work the way through the system like that.
Yeah, Sebastopol kind of has we call it our farm team. A great many of our police officers either start as volunteers or reserve police officers before they become police officers. And that allows us to check them out and let them check us out. And kind of, you know, Sebastopol is a unique community. I guess every community views themselves as unique, but we're a unique community. And they like a specific kind of policing. And it allows people to kind of grow into that before they're given the full-time job of police officer.
Yeah, learn the West County sensibility.
Exactly, yes.
Well, how many people are working in the police department in Sebastopol?
We had our annual department meeting last night, so I have a pretty current count.
You found everyone.
Exactly. We have our authorized strength, and we have 14 full-time police officers. Myself and the captain don't work patrol. We don't wear uniforms, so we're part of that 14. So really there are 12 four of whom are supervisors and the other eight are police officers, and they work the street 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. About half the time there's two of them on, about half the time there's three of them on. So that's one group of 14. We have our own dispatch center. Our lobby is never locked. It's only been locked one time in the last 21 years, and that's when somebody brought in a hand grenade and set it on the front counter. So we had to tell them to leave, and we locked the lobby. But other than that, if you are in need of help in the city of Sebastopol 24 hours a day, you can call, and a human being will answer the phone, or you can walk in the front lobby, and a human being will be there. And so we have six dispatchers. And their supervisor and a parking enforcement person. So there's eight people in that capacity. Then we have the reserve police officers, and there's nine of them. We have community volunteers, and there's about 15 of them. And then we have
what are community volunteers?
Those are people who are too old to be police explorers, which is the last group that I was going to mention. So these people are 20, and the oldest is 90.
Wow!
So the oldest age keeps growing with her. Every time she has a birthday, the upper age goes up. And they do all kinds of things for us. The 90-year-old files fingerprint forms in the office. It's an important contribution. It would be done by a paid person if she wasn't there to volunteer. Other volunteers are out on patrol. They have their own vehicle. Of course, they're not taking enforcement action, but they're an extra set of eyes, an extra set of ears. And there are certain calls, like something that's in the roadway or a vacation check on a home, that they can do. And so they really expand our ability to provide service. So there, it's a wonderful group. And I'm proud of the fact that we have police explorers who are young people interested in a career in public safety. It doesn't have to be police, but public safety. Then the older adult volunteers, and then the reserve police officers who are also volunteers. It's unique to have an agency our size with all three categories of volunteers.
Beautiful. That's a great community spirit.
Yeah, and it helps us if we have a parade like the Apple Blossom Parade or the 3rd of July fireworks, or heaven forbid we have an earthquake or a flood. I've worked when we've had major floods. We have greater resources than if we didn't have those cadre of volunteers.
Right. No, very important at those times, yeah. And now, obviously, it's a small department, so you can't do everything. Do you like lab stuff? Do you send out to the county or things like that? How does that work?
We actually kind of, there's certain things we don't do. We don't do civil matters like evictions. Those are done by the sheriff wherever they occur. That's a state law. We don't take school bus crashes if there's kids on the bus. That's a highway patrol thing, no matter where in the state. But other than that, we do it all. Thankfully, it's been a while, but when we have homicides, murders, we conduct those investigations. When we have fatal automobile collisions, we conduct those, and then down to littering and cat up a tree kind of calls. But if we need help, we ask for it. And law enforcement in this county is very collaborative, and so we can call on the Sonoma County Sheriff's Office, we can call on the California Department of Justice, we can call on other agencies that have expertise. So we are capable of doing all aspects of our job, but we also know when we need some advice and need some support, and we seek it.
That's actually one of my favorite parts about the Sebastopol Police Department, and was something that was very attractive for me, was even though we are a smaller department, we do everything, like Jeff said, and it's very valuable. I mean, if you worked for a larger department or even some other smaller departments, they'll have detectives or other type of staff like that. So when you originally get a case, you usually immediately pass it on. So when they have patrol officers, they literally are just on the streets and just giving everything away. With our department, we follow everything through. And so in my 5 years I've been there, I've investigated almost every crime that there is. And so when I go to these trainings, when we go for mandated trainings and whatnot, it's amazing because I'm in these trainings with police officers and sergeants and detectives from San Francisco, LA, San Diego, all these huge agencies. And the last question is like, have you seen this drug or have you dealt with this crime? And some people raise their hands, but almost every single time, there's rarely been an instance where I haven't raised my hand on something I haven't seen or dealt with. And it's just amazing because it's just that much more experience that you get at our smaller department, but yet we're very thorough and we do a very good job with all of our investigations. And so it's quite amazing. It's actually very valuable.
Yeah, when you can follow through, it's not getting left somewhere. The continuity is there that really can speed things.
And I think that's helpful for the victims. I think when the first person who shows up is the person who stays with the investigation, who's the person they see in court. They have a name, they have a face. Our officers don't hesitate to give out their personal cellular phone numbers so they can get phone calls. That connectivity is better for the victim than being bounced from one face and one person to another. Sometimes that's unavoidable, and so I'm not trying to be critical of other agencies. It's just the way they're structured. But I think we're really lucky in our community to have that connection that stays throughout the case.
No, it's wonderful because victims often get the short end of the stick. It seems even after they've become a victim, that it gets they still become victimized, don't they?
Absolutely.
In that process, so that's wonderful. Anything you can help is great. And now they are here because there's going to Jeff and David are here because there's going to be a community meeting at Annerley High School on Thursday, January the 23rd, beginning at 6:30, and it's hosted by Sebastopol Police Department and Annerley High School. So we'll get to that. How all that happened. I know one of my favorite readings of the newspaper is the police blotter. And is it real? It actually comes from the blotter on the desk of the police department?
It's not like the old school blotters. Okay. I've been around long enough to remember the old school blotters. It's an electronic blotter now, so there's really no blotting that happens. But we have a computer program that generates reports for the press, and they come in and get them. There's state laws that dictate what we have to release and what we don't have to release, and we try to strike a balance between the public's right to know what's happening in the community, but also not, you know, overplaying the crime that happens and making things embarrassing for the victims or those that are involved. So there's a substantial amount of interest. People often say, you know, they always read what's going on in town on the crime log. So,
oh yeah, there's some very silly things happen.
Yep.
Well, it seems like I'm just trying to think of percentages. It seems about half seems to be a lot of moving violations, things like that. Half, you know, maybe burglaries or those type of things, and the other half is maybe D&D, drunk and disorderly, or something. Is that about the? I don't know, is that a good percentage or how that works?
That's right. One of our biggest issues we have in town is obviously traffic.
Yeah.
Highway 12 and 116 intersect there. It's one of the busiest intersections in the county, and so that's an obvious issue. It's either in the day and at night, especially if there's other events. Everybody's going out to the coast or Guerneville. And so that traffic is one of the bigger things that you would probably see on there. And also with the, like you mentioned, the drunk and alcohol related issues, we do have a lot of bars, especially in a small radius downtown. And so especially at night, that becomes one of the bigger things that the police department deals with, because we do have people that drink too much or drink and drive. And so those crimes do actually, there's a lot more of those at night than most other things. We're very fortunate. Where in our town, it's the people, it's probably the police department, and just everything together. We don't have too many violent crimes, and it's amazing. Actually, I think was it last year we were the lowest in the county in violent crimes, and that's absolutely amazing. I think it's a testament to the kind of police department we have, the officers we have, and also the local citizens and how people treat each other. And so, but those two things that we mentioned before, the traffic and the alcohol related issues, those are the bigger issues we deal with in the town, because they're just, like I said, with the traffic and the bars, it just happens to be that way.
Right.
One of the things that people will complain about the Sebastopol police is that we do pretty strictly enforce the California Vehicle Code. Both in terms of speeding, seatbelt, red light, etc.
Tell me about it. The first week I moved here,
you learned.
I found out
it's basketball.
It's basketball.
Okay. All right. And then in the evening, the other part of the vehicle code is DUI laws. And what I always tell people is our primary job is to save lives. I mean, we have other duties: save lives, protect property, provide service. Right. But number one is to save lives. Mm-hmm. And in a town like ours, with 30,000 to 35,000 vehicle trips a day. That's through a single intersection right there by where Pellini's used to be. That's our biggest threat. And so there's ways you address that. You do it by roadway engineering, which we've done. We've enhanced crosswalks. We've modified the way roads are configured. So we've done the engineering piece. You do it through education. And we've run articles in the newspaper. We send out alerts on our what we call the Nixle alert. Oh, yeah. We put it on our Facebook page. So we're doing the education piece. But the third piece is enforcement. We give more warnings than tickets. People wouldn't think that's true, but it is true. But it's been successful. Our last fatality, the last time somebody died, was in May of 2009. And that was solo DUI crash into a light pole downtown. Hard to maybe prevent that. They had just come into town on a motorcycle and were speeding and crashed. So with the volume of traffic, to have gone now close to 5 years without losing a life, yes, some people don't like to get pulled over, and they sure don't like to get tickets, but they're all alive, and that's a pretty good thing.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah.
That is, as you say, that is the job, to keep people safe.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, that's the thing.
And that is truly the motive. Yeah. People will often suggest that there's a financial motive or some other ill motive. The amount of money we get from traffic fines is minuscule. It's de minimis. It's a tiny portion of the city budget. It does not come back to the police department anyway.
It goes to a general fund or something?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So the motive is to do a good job and keep the community safe.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think, now that I haven't had one since, that's been 6 years, so I learned. It was good. And now they're in because they've basically been drugs and kids is really what this community meeting is about. And both of you have been working on this for a few years now. Can you give me a background about how this meeting really has got to this point?
Sure. I can give you a longer term and David can give you a shorter term. Longer term, a couple of years ago, I looked at some data that's called the California Healthy Kids Survey data. Folks may not know, but in the 5th, 7th, 9th, and 11th grades, students throughout the state of California take a survey, and it's about their health. And there's a great many aspects to it. It asks some very hard questions in the older grades about people who've thought about suicide or tried to commit suicide, whether they feel connected to a parent, to an adult, whether they feel challenged in school, alcohol use, tobacco use, drug use, healthy. It's a comprehensive look at youth health. And in Sebastopol, in the West County, a great many of the indicators are wonderful. The indicators of resilience, people feel youth feel connected to our community. They feel connected to the schools. They feel connected to the adults. I mean, a great many of the indicators are healthy and wonderful. But a couple were not so great, and those were related to the use of drugs, specifically marijuana, among young people, the perception that marijuana is not harmful for young people. So that was concerning to me. Mm-hmm. And then I was connected with a family where some of the children ran away. They were good kids, a good family, good solid upbringing, but they got into some delinquent behavior and started running away, and real quickly were able to find any drug they wanted in Sebastopol, engage in very risky behavior. And so because of that, I reached out to the pastor of Hessel Church. His name is Rich Kundle. That's where I attend. And I said, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? And we were joined by the superintendent of the high school district, Keller McDonald, who was just named the Citizen of the Year for the city of Sebastopol. It came out this week. Diana Rich, who runs our community center, and Diane Davis, who runs our Coalition for Alcohol and Drug-Free Youth. And the five of us said, let's call a community meeting. So we did. And in August of 2012, we had a meeting at the police department, about 35 people that we had selected, trying to be a cross-section, including youth. It's crucial to include the youth in this process. And out of that, the process was interesting to me. We asked the attendees, we said, in a perfect world, what do you want for the Sebastopol area youth? And we had everybody write their answers on a post-it note. The room was quiet, so you didn't have one overly powerful personality rule the conversation. And people could write as many answers on as many post-it notes as they want. And there was over 100 suggestions of what we want for our kids. And some were very specific. A breakfast when you're hungry. a coat on a cold morning. Others were broad. A lifelong love of learning. Feeling connected to the community. So that was kind of our goal of what we wanted for kids was these 100-plus things. The second question is, what are we doing right? What are we as a community doing right? And there were, again, over 100 things, good schools, good churches, caring adults, athletic opportunities, blah, blah. I mean, a great many things were listed. So the last question was, okay, if we know what we want and we know what we're doing, what's missing?
Right.
What do we still need to do? And so the three things that came out of that bubbled to the top where the need to network our resources better. So we don't have silos. So we're not, you know, over the fence from each other, but we're all working communally. Right. The second was to get drug education back into the early grades, not, you know, just say no, but something deeper that really helps kids with resistance skills.
Had there been some before, or the, just the say no, or was there something
there was, yeah. And then with standardized testing came in, much of that got shoved out. And so we were working with the superintendents of the middle schools who've been in the business for a long time, and they said, you know, we used to do a great deal of prevention in a lot of areas, including drug prevention, but that all got shoved out by the testing process.
Oh, wow.
And the third thing was to create more jobs, mentorships, and internships for our youth so they feel connected to the business community. Mm. And so we went forward and did things. We created a 75-page Sebastopol area parent resource guide, and I've been distributing those at back-to-school nights to network those existing resources.
Right.
All fifth graders in the West County, well, the Sebastopol area of West County, now get a curriculum called Too Good for Drugs. And it's a evidence-based program to teach them the drugs for the developing body are not healthy and ways to avoid it. And we had our first Take a Teen to Work Day in Sebastopol. So we met that third. Okay. So there's ongoing
connecting
efforts.
Yeah,
absolutely. So finally, we had a follow-up meeting this August of 2013. We have some new initiatives that are underway. We're looking to create positive activities for youth in the Sebastopol area. That's one initiative.
Excellent.
We're trying to create parent education to help support parents in their role in raising their children. And the other is career and workforce development for young people. Some of them feel that they get the education in school, but in terms of being ready to enter the work world, they're not quite where they wish they were. And so those are still being developed. It's only been since August, so we're only about six months into the year-long process. But we haven't forgotten our first three efforts from August of 12, and now we've added three more from August of 13. So that's kind of what's going on broadly in a community. And based on that, the principal of Anley High School asked us to provide training to the staff, and David Edney did that. So maybe he can describe what that was and how that went from there.
Yeah.
How did you pull all that information together to make that presentation?
What we did was we took things like statistics from our cases that we've had over the several years, also from websites online that have general statistics. Every year, usually the Justice Department or even the California Justice Department put out statistics in regards to polls they've taken through kids in middle school and high school in regards to drug use and safety. And so we put all that together, and we came up with a really informative PowerPoint presentation where we, I believe Annalee had about 50 staff members there. Almost everybody was there from that school in Laguna High School. And also, and what we did was we went through what we see as a major trend over the last year or two with kids in our area, not just Sebastopol, but West County and Santa Rosa and whatnot. And we just explained to them what to look for, what kids look like if they are using drugs, what the drugs look like themselves, or even just the paraphernalia, you know, with like marijuana pipes or other types of paraphernalia. Kids bring those to school. And so we showed them signs and symptoms for that, objective things to look for. And so they can try and pay attention to that. They already have enough on their plates. Education is huge, and they're, you know, that's what their focus is. But sometimes you see kids acting differently or what they might think is weird. And so that's something that we showed them, signs and issues to look for to make sure they understand that. And also one of the bigger things they had that that, and we also went to El Molino High School, that they brought up was that the huge explosion of e-cigarettes.
Oh yeah,
and so that's one of the biggest issues. Actually, even with the even with the scarier sounding drugs and harder drugs, that's what they really wanted to learn about, because that's that's a big thing now happening with kids, especially in high school.
Is the flavor thing and stuff.
The flavor and the fact that certain things like vaporizers or whatnot, you can actually put marijuana and other things into when they originally were just supposed to be used for nicotine. And so there's a lot of stuff out there with that. There was one of the statistics we had was in taken from 2012, where they said over and across the entire U.S., at least they said 1.8 million kids between the grades of 9 and 12 have at least tried the electronic cigarettes.
Wow.
And that's actually a lot more than kids even tried smoking that year, they said.
Oh, my goodness.
So the percentages are staggering. And that's just trying it. It doesn't mean necessarily all become addicted to it, but it definitely is easier because things like you said with the flavors and whatnot, they think it's harmless. It's not going to hurt them. It's not really a drug or anything like that. But it's actually becoming a really huge issue.
Do they? It doesn't operate under the same rules as cigarette.
Not all of it does. No, purchasing of like things like the e-cigarettes and stuff that does. Mm-hmm. You still have to be a certain age, but it's not like it's that difficult to get. Mm-hmm. But the issue with that is the oils and the flavors. And those things are not regulated by the FDA or anything like that. And so the issue that they're having now is because you can get those things and then you can inject other things with it, is making it easier for kids to get these things. So that's something that the government is trying to figure out how to deal with, because like I said, it's such a huge explosion lately that it just kind of, they're trying to catch up to it.
Yes, and new concepts. I suppose the rules have got to be formed around it.
I think that's why David's presentation, and he did it with Sergeant David Edney, so it was the two Davids making this presentation, or David Ginn, rather, was current and it was local. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a generic overview of drug use in the United States. It was what we see every day with both adults and young people. And it's, you know, there was a day where the only drug use might be smoking a roach of marijuana, you know, out on the playground.
Right.
And everybody knows what a roach of marijuana looks like. And so if you were a teacher or an administrator, it wasn't hard to figure out what the drug was. We know what people look like when they're stoned that way.
Right.
But it's so much more varied now. And I think that's what the staff really appreciated, was the eye-opening exposure of, oh, my goodness, I've seen this happen in front of my face and didn't know what was happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being off the street myself for 12 years, I would probably overlook drug use or drug paraphernalia if it wasn't for the training and education that they're providing onto what's happening locally now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, imagine, you know, certainly with pills and other medications, that's a whole nother thing. You know, kids get it from parents or whatever. It's a huge area which is sort of pretty gray in terms of how you deal with that, I would say.
It's true. That is a big area, too, especially as processed drugs like cocaine and methamphetamine, things like that, those things get expensive. Things like the pills can get easier for somebody has a sore back or. And you know, you can get prescribed those things, and it doesn't cost as much because if insurance will cover it, you can. Yeah, several years ago, when OxyContin was huge, before they changed the formula on it, you could sell a pill between one pill, so 150 milligram pill, for between $50 and $100.
Oh my God!
And so that's how insanely huge it was, and how much money you can make. And so if you went to Kaiser and got your 50 pills for $10. Because you had, you know, sore back or whatever other issues you had going on, you could turn that around, and people were making lots of money on selling these drugs.
Wow.
And we were seeing that in Sebastopol as well. And the other thing I wanted to touch on was the one of the other big parts that we're also educating the staff on, and hopefully the parents this next week, is the what we see in the media. Everything's so influential with these kids and music stars and movie stars. And one of the things I was putting on today on the PowerPoint was all the movie stars that are using these cigarettes and the vaporizers. They think it's harmless because, oh, it's just the flavor of nicotine or whatever. But then kids see this and they're like, oh, it's totally fine to do that because they're doing it. Or things like ecstasy, things like that. It's in songs every day. Sorry, I'm forgetting her name. She's a famous pop star right now, and she sings about it in her songs, and they're huge. They're number one hits on the radio, and people think that they're saying just the names of somebody when they're actually saying the names of the drugs.
So the influence, the subliminal influence there, basically throughout.
Yeah. So it's absolutely amazing. And so things like that are things that we're trying to show people, the staff members, the parents, so they have an idea of what to look for when they think it might be something just that's harmless.
Right. Wow.
You make a good point about the pills, and when David's right about the OxyContin, people who would never try drugs, who would view heroin and methamphetamine as dirty and criminal, and you know, only a loser would use those drugs, but when it's a prescription medication, that comes from a pharmacy, that's safe, that's not going to hurt me. And the tragedy was, well, there's a good news and then a bad news. The good news, as David said, is the chemical composition of OxyContin was modified so it was less abusable. So that was great. And a large number of people who were abusing it stopped, which was great. But a large number couldn't, and they turned to heroin.
Oh, it did.
And so we saw a spike in OxyContin arrests 2 or 3 years ago. It dropped for a year. And then last year we saw a spike in heroin arrests. And these are clean-cut, West County go to school kids who are using heroin.
Wow.
And they were led there through prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. So,
a question, do kids get drugs from other kids or from strangers? How is it obtained?
It's rarely strangers nowadays. It's usually from other friends, or if they can't get it from those friends, somebody knows somebody who has it. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge network of it. And usually if you want to get the drug, especially if you're a kid nowadays, you can find somebody that can either has it or they can get it for you. And it's that prevalent. And those are some of the things that we're talking about. It's kind of crazy how simple it is, especially with things with social media.
Oh yeah.
Things like on Facebook. We see it all the time where kids that we've dealt with or kids that are now adults that we still deal with or have dealt with, they'll post it right on Facebook. Mm. They'll just say, hey, I've got some of this, $25.
Oh, my goodness.
And you'll see really? Other kids that we know responding. Oh, I want some of that. Where do I go to meet you up for this? Or, you know, what's your phone number to call? And it's all just out there for everybody to see. It's amazing how blatant that is.
Just oblivious to the yeah.
Yeah. And especially places like Facebook, they're so huge. They don't actually cater to that. And if they see it, they shut it down. Or if you report it, they would shut it down. But the problem is there's so much of it. Mm. They don't have the time or the people to actually catch all that and deal with it. And so it's as easy as doing that. Right? If you even just put it out there yourself, you could get dozens of responses from people you know or somebody you know that they know that would probably respond to you and get you what you need.
Wow.
When we had the OxyContin issue, we had entrepreneurs, young people, 18 to 20, who would travel down to San Francisco, buy it where it was cheaper, mm-hmm. come up to the Sebastopol Town Plaza and sell it at a profit daily. We eventually arrested them, but in the process of investigating them, they were making daily, sometimes twice daily trips.
Wow.
Just like, you know, you would go to a wholesaler and buy something at a price, and then you bring it up to a market and sell it at a markup. That's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. So created a system for it, the supply and demand, yeah.
I was kind of hoping to touch on something we floated near just a moment ago in our conversation, and that is what I'll call is the perception of harm. One of the things that we face with West County youth is that a notable number of parents in the West County have or do use marijuana, and their viewpoint is often, I smoked a little weed in high school. It was a rite of passage. I smoked some weed in college. I have a job. I vote. I'm not crazy, So what's the big deal? And what sometimes gets overlooked is that the potency of marijuana has increased over the years. I always tell people, your tomatoes are better formed and firmer or redder because they've been made so, and your corn is yellower and the rows are in. So just like all those crops have changed over the last 20 or 30 years, marijuana has too. There's a science to it. And so the THC content, the potency, is between 3 and 5 times what it used to be in the 60s and 70s. Mm. And often
the old Mexican stuff, compared to that back then, yeah.
And when I often ask people, I say, you said you smoked marijuana when you were younger and it didn't really harm you. If you smoke 3 to 5 times the amount, how would you be? And they usually say, I'd be a mess. I had one friend who smoked that much and he, his life kind of stalled out they had tough times. Well, if the young people are smoking the same volume but with that 3 to 5 time enhanced potency, then that's the equivalent of that one guy in the group whose life was derailed by use of marijuana back then. So, parents have to decide what message they send to their children. I'm not about reefer madness. If you touch marijuana, you're going to go crazy and you'll be locked up in federal prison. I think that's the wrong approach. But I also think that there are some parents who don't do their children they do them a disservice by not saying, the developing body and the developing brain, and we now know that the brain is developing under the age of 25, are not enhanced by use of these kind of alcohol or tobacco or other drugs, including marijuana. So we're hoping with this community meeting to kind of arm parents with information that they can then use to maybe modify their own life or at least the message that they send to their children.
To their children, yeah. Yeah, we have the police in the studio. We have the Sebastopol Police Chief, Jeff Weaver, and Officer David Edney. And We're in here talking about drugs and kids and what's happening in our area with them. And they have a meeting, very important meeting, coming up on January the 23rd and it begins at 6:30 at the Annerley High School Theatre. And that's in hosted by Annerley High School and the Sebastopol Police Department. Yeah, let's just talk about alcohol briefly. What's happening in that? It's a perennial problem. I don't know if it's getting worse, better. What's happening?
You know, we've been dealing with or trying to address youth use of alcohol for about the last 6 years, and based on the California Healthy Kids Survey data, we're seeing some success there. We've done some of it through legislation. We have a social host ordinance, mm-hmm. which says that mm-hmm. those who host an event at their home where minors consume alcohol can be held liable criminally for that. We did a substantial amount of publicity there. And we've partnered with a student group at Annerley High School, the One for One Club, which stands for one student for one student reaching another. And they just weeks ago held a Living Better Week at Annerley High School where they focused on an issue every day. And one of those days was the issues related to teen alcohol use. And so they had officers on campus with goggles that show what it's like to walk or drive impaired. Even the principal gave it a try.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So that went over well, and a great many students signed a pledge to forego alcohol consumption for that week. Of course, most students don't drink at all, but those who do said, you know, I can do without it for the week. And they were joined by administrators and teachers, even though they're over 21 and can drink, they said, oh, we'll give that up to show that you don't have to have alcohol to have an enjoyable time.
They were joined by police officers as well.
Oh, there you go. Oh, good. Okay, good.
All right.
So we've tried education and legislation, and that's an ongoing effort, and it's working. Do young people still drink? They do. Will they continue to? They will. But if we can lessen the number that are exposed to alcohol as their brains and bodies are developing, and for those that don't stay away from it, if we can lessen the amount they use and make them wiser about decision-making processes, it's all about reducing harm, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. It's to me, I know, growing up and what I see from kids, there's not enough for them to do. So the community doesn't give them things to do, involve them in things, or, you know, have a wide range of things. Do you see that? Is it they're getting, you know, disconnected because of that? They're not really being, you know, given enough?
It could be, but there is actually a lot to do. And we were actually talking about this on the way over today. Everybody has choices, even kids. You can make the decision whether or not you want to drink or another, whether or not you want to participate in one activity or another. And so I feel that at least Sebastopol, there's lots to do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of community events happening at all times. There's a lot of after-school programs. Like you said, with some of the initiatives they're doing, they're trying to make more opportunities for kids to get out and be able to do things. And so I think it's mainly a choice. But, you know, when we see spikes in things like kids having parties or drinking, it's usually during breaks, like the summer or winter, especially kids that are maybe coming home from college and whatnot. And so I think it's just more of a social thing for them at that point, as opposed to not having necessarily enough to do. It's just something that they choose to do because lots of people are doing it in that group setting. And so, I don't know. What do you think, Jeff?
And earlier, I mentioned that parent resource guide.
Oh, yes.
And there is a section in there on sports and recreation. There's a sports in there on parks and open spaces. And so when I speak to the back-to-school classes of the second graders, I point that out and say, if you have a young person who says, Mom, Dad, there's nothing to do, grab that parent resource guide, and you'd be shocked at the open space where you could go take a walk, go fly a kite, go take a hike, all the opportunities for youth activity. And then, as I mentioned, we're trying to enhance the internships, and job opportunities. And I'm seeing that develop. I'm seeing young people. We have incredible businesses. Baskin and Robbins is known for hiring young people. Screamin' Mimi's has a great many young people. Sebastopol Hardware hires young people. And I think our business community is a very caring community. And they might stretch themselves a little bit financially to give one more young person a job because they know that it pays off in developing a healthy community. So you know, are there times where kids are going to be bored despite every opportunity? There are. But with the athletic opportunities, we, of course, have a movie theater. We have a live theater. And the One for One Club is doing events both during the school and after school that are drug and alcohol free to give another option. So there's a lot of efforts underway to avoid the excuse of there's nothing to do.
So Yeah, exactly. No, that's neat. And that's in, it's good that kids are getting involved in this as well. How do they approach that with other kids? That must be pretty tricky, how they can create that comfort level to be able to speak to kids themselves.
I'll kind of use that as a draw for the January 23rd meeting. There's three components to that meeting. David Edney and David Ginn will present their informational overview, the same that they gave to the teachers. I'll talk about the community efforts that we've touched on here. But to me, the most important group is the one-for-one students. There's about four or five of them who are going to round out this presentation. And I will tell you, the first time I met these students, I was just astounded by their stories, their dedication, their capability. They, our future is in good hands, let me assure you. And many of them have very compelling stories of family issues or their own related to drug or alcohol use that they have overcome. And so they are well-spoken. They participate in training at the National Teen Leadership Program, which is held at UC Davis every summer. And so they don't have any issues standing up in front of a group of students, a group of parents, a group of community members and saying, look, these are the issues that we see and this is what it needs to be done. And when it comes from the students themselves, it is so much more real and it's so much more motivational and it's so much more effective. And so we learned early on that if this was a parent, you know, imposed thing or an adult imposed thing, it would fail. And so that's why we've partnered with the youth of the community through One for One and other ways, leadership classes at Antley High School, to get the message out, because it's got to be a partnership and it actually needs to be led by the young people.
Yeah, you can't talk down to them, basically. That's not going to, you know, work at all. Yeah.
Those kids are amazing. Yeah. When we did the DUI goggles thing he was explaining earlier, they actually set everything up. We just showed up, brought the goggles. They set up the course. They had all these statistics plastered all around the gym where they had this course at. They had they walked all the other kids through it and the staff members, and they talked to them about things. We just kind of just filled in the gaps about information about what it means to be under the influence, either just in general or driving. But they really just took over the whole thing and set the end. There was a whole week. It was the initiative for Being Healthy Week.
Or Living Better.
Living Better. There you go. Thank you. He's wearing that. That's right. And so, so they set up the whole thing, and it was just amazing to watch them just be so excited, enthusiastic. And like you said, they're well-versed. They understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. And they got everybody energetic and excited to be there and having fun. And it was really amazing. These kids are amazing.
Yeah, that makes your life a lot easier when you have that. You know, you can see that reaction.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what you're going to be speaking about at the meeting into a little bit more detail, if you can. Now, you said the first segment was yours, your segment.
Yes, that'll be our, yeah, ours will be the informational piece about
David Edney.
It'll be the informational part about the drugs that we're seeing, especially in our area.
What are we seeing right now? Is there something new? Is anything, any trending up things?
Yeah, there are a few. Marijuana, obviously, is one of the bigger things. It's usually a gateway type drug that we see constantly, not just with the kids, but with adults. What we've seen lately happening, or a few things actually, is, like you mentioned before, since pills have gone down with OxyContin and whatnot, we've seen heroin use go up and synthetic forms of that, which they make pills and other other forms. Those have gone up as well, because especially the people that were addicted to those still have that addiction, and so they find it in those uses. We've seen that come up. We've seen lots of things like nitrous oxide with whippets, the things that you make whipped cream with.
I saw something about that. You can literally go down
to the gas station and buy those for whipped cream, and kids are using those. They'll either put them in balloons or they have things called crackers. You can buy these cheap little metal contraptions that'll actually make the nitrous oxide go off, and kids are using that. We've seen kind of an uptick in those.
Oh, wow.
and also just pills.
Are kids getting hurt with this? Are you seeing...
Emergency room stuff? Slowly, those are coming up. It used to be a huge rave thing when raves were big, but now kids are just using them recreationally. Actually, the other night when we were working, we found a box of empty nitrous oxide little cartridges, about 40 of them, because they're not too expensive. It's actually quite scary in how easy it is to get it. And so we are seeing an uptick in those. Hospitals are seeing a huge increase, especially for all types of drugs. One of the statistics we had was for ecstasy, where in the last 4 years, there's been 125% increase in hospital visits over the U.S. in kids under the age of 21 for use in that, because it's such a dangerous drug. And so we are seeing an uptick in hospital visits for a lot of these recreational drugs that kids are using. So those are a few of them around here that we're seeing in juveniles. We're not really seeing a lot of meth use. It's there, but it's not really there. That's usually in adults. It's usually the things that I've already mentioned that we're seeing. And then one of the bigger ones we're seeing now is concentrated cannabis. So things like oil, compressing, they're actually taking butane and forcing the butane through the marijuana and creating hash oil and whatnot. And we're seeing an uptick in that in the kids a lot.
And the process of manufacturing hash oil is very dangerous. Mm-hmm. There are a great number of house fires that have been caused here in Sonoma County because the stuff literally blows up. And people who've been hospitalized by that.
Right. And of course, the fires that are caused in grow houses and things, that we all seem to see that in the paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had a two-story condominium burned down a block away from the police department because it was being used as a grow house.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, because usually when they do that, obviously it's off the books, or they have a lot of power and whatnot hooked up inverters, and so all that stuff is very dangerous, and we do see that.
Yeah.
Wanted to touch on something David mentioned about the methamphetamine use. Methamphetamine is probably the scariest drug to me. It is so addictive. And I took a class on methamphetamine. They said it's really the only drug that would even override a maternal instinct. They said, you want to talk about one of the most core human instincts is that of a mother protecting their child. Yeah. That goes back to the mother bear protecting the cubs. It's just innate. It's who we are. And methamphetamine will override that. And David is correct, of course. With young people, thankfully, we're not seeing that. Sadly, with adults, we are. At our department meeting last evening, I presented our arrest statistics in the area of drugs, and the number of methamphetamine arrests we made last year was the highest we've ever made. So it's prevalent, more so than it has been in the past, among adults.
Okay.
Thankfully, it hasn't made its way into our young people in any notable way.
Yes.
It's
still there, but it's not as much. The statistic we have is almost 2% of high schoolers polled have tried it between the grades of 9 and 12, and about 5% have access to it if they wanted to. But it is still a very small percentage, which is very thankful, because it is, I agree with Jeff, that it is one of the more serious drugs that we deal with as a whole, and especially across the nation. It's actually one of the worst.
Yeah.
So it's most drugs are very addictive, but this is like highly addictive. It's extremely dangerous, and it's amazing what it does to people. You can look it up online. They have something called Faces of Meth. And it's amazing to see over even just a year what somebody looks like when they are addicted to this drug, as opposed to what they look like after 365 days. It's absolutely astounding. And we've seen it in our town as well. There are some people that are very addicted to it, and you can see the difference over the years. It's quite amazing. Yeah. They look like a completely different person.
Goodness. Of course, there's, for kids, there's so much mixed signals. Obviously, the mayor of our town owns the pot club, so that must be very hard for you to sort of, how do you handle that?
we face that with alcohol. Advertising, of course, to sell their product is, if you want to be funny, if you want to be sexy, if you want to be beautiful, if you want to be popular, if you want to be hip, then drink. I mean, that's the for the alcohol, wine, beer, everything, may say, please drink responsibly at the bottom of the ad. But the people who are involved are all happy and having a great time. Right. Otherwise, they wouldn't be selling their product.
Right.
So that is tough to tell kids, your body is developing, your brain is developing, this is illegal, don't do it.
Yeah.
But look at how much fun those people are having, but don't do it.
Right.
And so that is one concern that I have with the prevalence of marijuana, that as we move toward marijuana legalization, which is probably going to happen in this state, it doesn't help the messaging with young people. I get that adults should be able to make their own decisions about their own bodies. I understand that concept and philosophy. But I think a piece that may have been missing in this debate is the impact on our young.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
An element left out.
Yeah. The way they're influenced, and it's also a control issue. Not that adults don't have this problem either, but especially with kids, a lot of them with things like marijuana and alcohol, they don't know how to control how much to take or how much they're using. And that's the issue that we see. One of my first DUI arrests, actually my first DUI arrest I ever made, was a kid who was 18 years old, and he had just smoked marijuana. No alcohol, nothing else, but he had done so much of it that he was just so out of it that he didn't even know what was happening. Yeah. It was just amazing to see, because he didn't have any control over himself or what he was doing. So he even came back to me and told me that about a week later. He came in with his parents and he told me that. He goes, I don't even remember anything.
Wow.
And so because it was just so out of it. And so it's quite amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone is invited. Is that right?
Absolutely. This is something that the principal, when he saw the training that David and David did, he said, wow, we've got to get this to the parents, to the grandparents, to the community members, anybody who interacts with a young person or just wants to know for their own purpose.
Right.
And so he approached me and said, hey, would you support this? And I said, oh, my goodness, absolutely. So it's kind of a come one, come all.
Yeah.
And it will include the educational component. My piece will be an overview of what the community is doing, what we've done since the summer of 2012, and how people can support that, how they can be connected to that.
Okay.
And then the last piece will be the students themselves. And I think that that's reason enough right there to come.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Police Chief Jeff Weaver and Officer David Edney have been here to tell us about it, and hope everyone can go down there and contribute something to that and keep the ball rolling. Yep. Our kids are important.
They're the most, they're our future.
Yeah.
It's just contrite to say, but it's the truth. We all won't be around forever, and everything's going to be turned over to the next generation, and we want them to be ready and ready to do it in a happy and healthy and productive way.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for letting us be here this evening. It's been a real pleasure to be with you and to discuss this topic and to help spread the word. So thanks for your generosity.
Oh, a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming, and hopefully have you again, and we'll hear about some of the results and how it's going in the future.
Thank you.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Who really cares? To save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time,
there'll come a time,
when the world won't be singing,
when the world won't be singing,
flowers won't grow,
flowers won't grow, no,
bells won't be ringing,
no bells.